You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mottis.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mottis from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you're not doing that already, what are you doing? It's where Nuggets fans go. That's the hub for Denver Nuggets fans. You can advertise with this show. If you've been listening to this show all week, you know I've been talking about that. Looking for advertisers for the upcoming season. Already have a bunch of great partners, but looking to partner even more. So if you have a business or product that wants to advertise, get a hold of me, denverstiffs@gmail.com. Few ways better to advertise right now. It's a new frontier, the podcast world. I think the... It's like getting in early on a, in my opinion, getting in early on a great advertising opportunity that's not quite fully tapped just yet. This episode of the show is going to be on Jamal Murray. I've been doing a series for the last couple of weeks, why players will have the best year of their career, making the case for why guys are set to kind of make a leap or just to be better than they were last year. And I think with most of Denver's players, this is true. Obviously not all. But with most of the guys we look at, especially Jamal Murray, you know, he's a young guy. I think there's a lot of room for improvement and just a lot of an expected leap for guys. So I'm going to get into him. And then a little bit later in the show, in the last segment, I'm going to talk about Mason Plumlee, a guy who I actually do think will be better next year. But, you know, he's not necessarily approaching his prime. He's more in his prime, but there are reasons to think that he will be better for the Denver Nuggets next year. So let's kick things off with Jamal Murray. You know, the first reason for him, and among some of the bigger, actually all these reasons are pretty big. I think there's reason to be very optimistic about Jamal Murray making something of a leap. I think a lot of people sometimes get ahead of themselves and, oh, you know, he's going to average 25 a game this next year, 23 a game. I think that would take kind of a miracle. I look at more the leap between year two and year four. That's like a two-year leap. That's really where a player, I think, makes the biggest sort of improvements to their game. But I don't think it happens all in one season. But the number one reason for him, he actually gets to work out this offseason. And last year, you know, Jamal Murray is a guy that I think lives in the gym. I think he just loves basketball that much. His growing up, he talks about how his dad didn't let him have a phone. They didn't, you know, not a lot of TV and stuff. He wanted him out working on his game really from a young age. And Jamal Murray is a guy that I think learned to and sort of naturally was just so focused on the game. But last offseason, he had to have surgery on two hernias, two sports hernias, and basically missed the entirety of the summer. Had to do very, very light work to rehab from that injury, basically stay off of it. Couldn't even do shooting drills for a while there. So last year, not a complete waste of a summer, but you know, certainly close to a waste. And I think that having this summer to work on his game from day one, I think will be just absolutely enormous for him. The parts of his game that are already solid, you know, the shooting, just some of the individual skills, I think have always been there. But getting an offseason to actually work on NBA things, things that he learned in season, are going to be huge. Jamal Murray made a big leap in season last year, as you expect young players to. They're not just the player they show up on media day is not the same player they show up to game 82. Young guys get better through experience. But also through that experience, I'm sure there were times for Jamal Murray to look and say, okay, this is something I need to work on. This pass or this read in the pick and roll, whatever it may be, for a young player, I imagine there's a lot of those throughout the season. And then when you get to the offseason, you actually get to go into the lab, look at the notebook and say, okay, what are the things I kind of mark down throughout the year to work on? So can't be overstated, I don't think, how big of a deal this is. And, you know, looking at it, actually, I'll save some of the synergy stuff for a little bit later. Number two reason, he's going to play off ball a lot more this year. It's well talked about, even on this show, that Jamal Murray is sort of a combo point guard, you know, a combo guard. He's actually better off ball. In college, he played off ball and made the second most three-point shots of any freshman player in the history of the of NCAA basketball. He was off ball. Tyler Ulis was the point guard. Now, he played point guard at the high school level and on the AAU circuit, so he has those skills. It's not like he's one of these guys that has been shoehorned into the point guard position, but I think he's actually really, really, really good off ball when he doesn't have to worry about point guarding duties. I think his natural position is sort of to play both on ball and off ball. I mean, look, Steph Curry is a great comp for him. Is it Steph Curry the greatest shooter of all time? And they're certainly comparing the two is unfair to Jamal in a lot of aspects, although I don't think Jamal cares. I think Jamal's one of those guys that wants to be compared to Michael Jordan because the higher you set the bar, the harder he's going to jump. But you know, but he's not Steph Curry, at least not yet, and to get there would take an awful lot. I don't expect him to be that dynamic of a player or scorer, but you know, that's but the style I think is very, very similar. And if you look at Steph Curry, he handles a ton of the point guarding duties. He does a lot of pick and rolls, a little bit less so since Kevin Durant. They've run him more off ball since Kevin Durant arrived, but they won a championship with him running tons of pick and roll and having the ball in his hands, but also being a scorer and also using him off of screens, off of ball with sort of with Draymond Green or Andre Iguodala initiating the offense. I think for Jamal Murray, obviously you have Jokic to do that job, but I think the more playmakers you add to the court that can take on true point guarding duties, dribbling the ball up the court, you know, where he gets to start in the corner or start the offense coming off of a double stagger screen or whatever, I just think that's good for him. I think that's his game. He's very, very good, and some of the numbers reflect that. He's one of the best catch-and-shoot shooters in the league. 37% on catch-and-shoot shots as a rookie, up to 42% as a sophomore, as a second-year player. So already 42%, that ranked 20th in the entire NBA amongst players to take at least 200 such catch-and-shoot three-point attempts. I think he took like 270 or something like that. But 42% on those is very encouraging. I believe it was the highest mark on the team on catch-and-shoot three-point shots. And I actually think he can go even higher. 20th is impressive. 42% is impressive. But one, I think he's going to get better looks this upcoming season. And two, I just think he's improved. He's been a shooter his whole life, but every year he gets a little bit better at that skill, and he's in an age bracket now where I think we can expect him to be an even better shooter next year than he was last year. And some popular guys, this is an interesting one, some popular guys catch and shoot that have taken 200 three-pointers and what their percentages were. Steph Curry, 43.6%. So already Jamal Murray, pretty darn close. The difference between 42 and 43.6 is substantial, but you know, you could almost expect that type of improvement from him. Klay Thompson, 44.7%. J.J. Redick, 45.5%. Kyle Korver, 46%. Kevin Durant, 48.6% on catch-and-shoot three-pointers. How ridiculous is it that the Warriors have three of the top 20 guys in this category? Just absolutely insane. And then the number one guy, oh, this one hurts, Buddy Hield, 50.2%, just an elite knockdown catch-and-shoot three-point shooter. But I think Jamal Murray can go toe-to-toe with any of those guys, or will be able to go toe-to-toe with any of those guys at some point in his career, and I imagine he takes a step forward in his catch-and-shoot shooting this year. And if he shoots even just 43-44%, you know, you're talking about a pretty sizable increase for Denver. That's the improvement of maybe 4 or 5 three-pointers, in the total of the year, but I actually also think he's going to take more three-pointers, so that could mean an even bigger difference. Now you're starting to talk about, you know, every other game he makes an extra three. Here's an interesting thing kind of along these same lines about him playing off ball and becoming more of a catch-and-shoot three-point shooter. How many field goal attempts will he take next season? Last season he took 13.1. 42% of those were three, so we'll just say basically 4 out of 10 shots were three-pointers on 13 attempts. For reference, Steph Curry has averaged about 18 field goal attempts over the last 6 seasons, 58% of which were threes. So not only does Curry take more shots, but he takes a higher rate of his shots come from the three-point line. I think best for next year, my prediction for next year is he would raise his attempts from about 13 shots a game to about 14.5. Not a huge improvement in terms of number of shots he gets up, but a lot of that has to do with, you know, adding Will Barton to the starting lineup, adding Isaiah Thomas. There's more guys to get shots. But what I think will happen is the breakdown in his shots can change just a little bit. I think about 8 of those shots can and should be three-pointers. Now, Jamal Murray is a better guy at driving to the basket, driving to the hoop than Steph Curry. or at least I think he projects to be. That's one of his skills. So his game is always going to have a little bit more of that inside the three-point arc, and then also just the nature of the Warriors. I mean, they spread that court out so much. They're so good at driving and kicking and either getting, you know, getting those true Morey ball shots at the rim uncontested or kick out three uncontested. I don't know that Denver's going to be at that level, but I think if he's at somewhere around between 7 and 8 three-point attempts per game, to me, that would be great. You're cutting out a couple of those ill-advised drives to the rim. You know, he has a tendency sometimes to attack when he shouldn't. He has a tendency to get into the floater zone and take those bad floaters. But I think if he's about 14 and a half shots, 8 of them being threes, that would be great for his efficiency. And then also, you know, him and Gary Harris both saw their spot-up opportunities reduce a little bit this last season. I wonder if what that has to do with maybe playing a little bit less Gallo at the four last year. That those lineups really opened up for kickout. You know, the offense was a little bit more free-flowing. I think that contributed to it 2 years ago, him getting more spot-ups. I think next year he gets more spot-up attempts, and that'll be great for his efficiency. Back to Jamal Murray, reason number three, I think he's going to have an even better year next year, going to make sort of a leap, is the leap a point guard makes just in understanding the pick and roll. That's maybe the biggest leap, and one of the biggest leaps in sports for sure, when point guards learn to run the pick and roll, and it takes years. He's not going to be a great pick and roll player this in his third season. I think he's going to be an improved pick and roll player, but you know, he was at, according to Synergy, scored 0.839 points, so basically 84 points per possession when he ran pick and rolls, the ball handler last year, or I'm sorry, 2 years ago. Last year, that went up to 0.86. So basically, you had a 2% improvement. That's incredibly marginal. Incredibly marginal. But, you know, it's important, and I think that's actually pretty indicative of the rate of improvement, especially for a guy that didn't get to work on these things in his last offseason. That 2% improvement is sort of what point guards make. It's not, oh, 1 year you can't run the pick and roll, the next year you can. It's just these marginal improvements, and I think he'll make another one this year. If he can get that up into the, you know, point. So that was for the pick and roll. I can't remember what percentile it is here. I got it right here in front of me. That's roughly the 60th percentile, 65th percentile, roughly, 63rd to be exact, 63rd percentile on pick and roll. I think he can get up now, maybe make a 4% or 5% improvement, which doesn't sound like a lot. But again, you're talking about a ton of possessions there. He ran 341 pick and rolls, according to Synergy, 341 pick and rolls in which the play ended with him taking a shot, having a turnover, or an assist. I imagine that number will continue to climb a little bit, maybe 380 this next year. And if his efficiency improves by 4 or 5%, again, all of these things are marginal, but they add up over the time. You shoot a little bit better on catch and shoot. You run the pick and roll a little bit better. And, you know, you're fighting those margins, and those turn into wins. Maybe just one or two wins a year, but one win would have made a heck of a difference last season. To look at Curry. Curry in his third year was at 0.89 points per possession in the pick and roll, according to Synergy, at 392 possessions. So I just said he's going to get 380. Curry got 390. So we're in that same ballpark. And he was at 0.89, nothing spectacular. By his sixth year, again, if you go year by year, these improvements are so incremental. But by his sixth year, which was the first title year, he ran 507 possessions and was a 0.97 in the pick and roll. So he had improved by about 8% in those that 3 year span. And remember, I think his fourth year or third or fourth year, he ended up getting injured. So really, you can almost cut 1 year out of his career there. Last year in the pick and roll, Steph Curry scored 1.13 points per possession in the pick and roll. Back down to only 300 possessions, so they actually, the Warriors with Kevin Durant especially, have really evolved their offense to put him off ball a lot more, so he's not running as many. But going from his third year to his eighth year, from 0.89 to 1.13 is just a heck of an improvement. I think Jamal Murray is going to slowly start climbing in that direction. I think this is another one that's maybe the biggest one here. Presumably, the Nuggets are going to play a much more free-flowing style of offense, presumably, Michael Malone will have a lot more trust in his players. You know, last year, such a young team. This next year, still young. But that core's been together now for three seasons. And I think one of the big things for the team this year is just going to be how much trust offensively can Malone allow the team, and what do they do with that trust? But I think Jamal Murray really benefits from that style of play. Famously, the Nuggets changed their offensive attack on January 22nd. You know, it was when Malone said he was going to start to trust the team a little bit more and call fewer plays. If you make that a demarcation line for his season, he averaged 2.9 assists prior to that, Jamal Murray did, and 4.2 assists after that. That's an improvement of 1.3. And if you listen to the show all year long, I actually brought this up in the month of February about how different Jamal Murray looked in the pick and roll. I thought early on in the season he looked much more like a scorer, but when he had passing lanes, tight passing windows in the pick and roll, he'd almost never throw it, to the point where they'd run pick and roll, get Jokic open, but he wouldn't do it because, oh, maybe that ball gets tipped or stolen 20% of the time, and for him it wasn't worth the risk. I'm guessing as a young point guard, and remember, he had to earn the starting position last year. I thought that was a bit silly, because he was going up against Emmanuel Mudiay, but nonetheless, you know, it wasn't, we take for granted a little bit that just where he was at mentally to start the season. He was still trying to prove that he was a starting caliber player, and he didn't start the season that well. He got off to a very slow start. But he had to kind of sort of prove that he can do that. And so I think one of the things young point guards are hyper aware of is their turnovers. And so I thought he passed up a lot of opportunities to run pick and roll and to get good shots for the Nuggets because he was more concerned with the downside of a turnover than the upside of running that efficient offense. When they started playing more free-flowing, the ball was popping, and there was less for him to sort of think about, more of a read-and-react game and less of a, you know, trying to do whatever was instructed of him, I think that had a large part to do with him just starting to make natural reads, throwing more confident passes, and, of course, statistically improve his assists per game by 1.3 assists. And then two more here. He won't have a prolonged shooting slump. At least I don't think so. I mean, knock on wood here. He started the year 2-for-21. 2-for-21 to start the year. That tanked his percentage. It really took him 3 months, basically, to get his percentage back up to a respectable number. He shot 39.5% from three over his last 67 games. That's an improvement of 2%. That's an improvement of about 4%. Because he finished the season 37.5%. But I think he's a clear 40% shooter on volume. He just has such a pure shot. He's able to knock down shots with different angles. He gets his feet set very quickly, gets his shot off very quickly. And I think if you just look at cutting out some of those prolonged slumps, both his rookie season and sophomore season where he started slow, I don't think that's going to happen next year. Part of it is the Nuggets' soft schedule, and part of it is, you know, he's healthier coming into the season. He's less stressed about it because he's already an established player. The Nuggets have given the nod of confidence that, no, he's going to be our starter. So I don't think he's going to have a prolonged slump, and that alone, I think, will help the Nuggets. Again, if he doesn't go 2-for-21, if he just goes his average of, you know, 7-for-21, 8-for-21, 9-for-21, somewhere in there, maybe Denver picks up an extra win in those first 6-7 games where he was really struggling. And then lastly, he's going to learn from Isaiah Thomas, and I think this one is huge. One of the weird parts about getting rid of Jameer Nelson last year wasn't just, you know, that I think he was good enough to play and probably would have single-handedly been enough to get the Nuggets in the playoffs last year, but also, you know, Jamal Murray was a guy that I think would have really benefited from his tutelage, just from how to run a pick and roll, what type of shots to take, and there wouldn't have been, in my opinion, you know, with Mudiay, I think there was always a frustration with Jameer of, I can't believe this guy is getting the nod over me. He routinely misses shots at the rim, turns the ball over, does all the things that kill you, doesn't play defense. And I think there was some frustration there. But I think with Jamal Murray, you know, the work ethic was different. The skill level was different. And I think it would have been a lot easier on Jameer and on Jamal if they were to just coming into camp last year would have said, okay, Jamal's the starter, Jameer's the backup, and Mudiay is sort of trying to break into the rotation. I think that would have been healthy for all parties involved. But this next year, that's exactly what the Nuggets are doing with Isaiah Thomas. He's a great player. He might actually be better than Jamal Murray at this stage of both of their careers. I mean, we don't know how healthy Isaiah is, but certainly 2 years ago he was. But what's nice is the Nuggets have gotten out in front of this and said, it doesn't matter, better or worse, doesn't matter. We have both guys kind of understand how they're going to be used. And I think that allows Isaiah Thomas to both, by example, but also maybe a little bit of coaching, just sort of walk him through the reads. I think Isaiah Thomas is a heck of a player in the pick and roll. He's just very crafty. He's a great finisher. He's a very good passer. And most of all, he's an incredible scorer. And I think that they're similar enough in style of play, not identical, but similar enough in the style of play that Jamal Murray is just going to learn a lot from watching him run the pick and roll, but also just from playing alongside him and working on those skills together. So I think it'll be another situation where Jamal starts the year better than he finished last year, but ends next year better than he starts. Talk about Mason Plumlee, one of the few old guys. Old, gosh, what is he, 20? He's a lot younger than me. He is 28 years old, so he's not even 29. But one of the older guys, crazy that 28 means he's a veteran, like the third oldest guy on the team, I think. But I actually think he's going to be better for the Nuggets. 2 years ago when he arrived midway through the season, played 27 games for the Nuggets. Last year played 74, but even last year there was some funkiness to it. He started some, he came off the bench, Jokic was hurt. I think this next year there's a lot more clarity about what his role is and just what he's supposed to be doing. But let's start first here. Number one, he's not going to be playing with Emmanuel Mudiay. You get ready for some crazy stats here. His net rating, or the Nuggets' net rating, with Plumlee and Mudiay on the court was minus 10 last year. What that means is the Nuggets got outscored by 10 points per 100 possessions every time, on average, when those two guys were on the court. And they were on the court for 332 minutes, which is not a lot. That's like a small sample size, except for we know just from watching Mudiay, it's a big enough sample size to certainly draw some conclusions. But here's what's crazy. He was Mason Plumlee, or the Nuggets were a plus 3 with Plumlee on the court without Emmanuel Mudiay in 1,108 minutes, which means Plumlee was a net positive for 3/4 of the minutes he was on the court. He was a positive. But what's crazy is the minutes were so bad with Mudiay that he was actually a net zero player. His net rating last year overall, I think minus 0.06. So just basically an even player. And that all comes from those 332 minutes with Mudiay that were just so bad, they anchored him down. So I know I picked on Mudiay a lot, and I know some, of the biggest Mudiay fans of the show over the last couple years have really taken offense to it. But I'm saying this as a compliment to Mason Plumlee that I think just not having him on the court, not having Mudiay on the court, will help him a lot with some of the things that he's particularly good at. And not just having Mudiay, but replacing him with a guy who's very good in the pick and roll, and Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas is a guy that, Mason Plumlee is a guy that can finish above the rim. I mean, he's super athletic. Just a straight spread pick and roll, nothing fancy, no moving parts, just 1-5 pick and roll where the point guard comes off off of the screen and makes the read, and the big guy just rolls and tries to jump up and attack the rim. I think he's going to be very, very good at that. It's funny, Devin Harris had developed a nice chemistry with Mason Plumlee in just 2 months with the Nuggets, and Devin Harris is not even a true point guard. He's not really a great ball handler. He's more of an off-ball guy, but those two guys had a nice connection with lots of alley-oops. I think Isaiah Thomas is going to have a similar effect on Mason Plumlee, to the point where I think there's going to be a lot of nights where Mason Plumlee gets a ton of points in short minutes and maybe even earns extra minutes for him, in part just because of how good Isaiah Thomas is at running the pick and roll with him. He'll also just have more scoring threats in general. He's going to play, this is number 3 on my list, he's going to play more 4-out lineups. Whether you're backup power forward, so there's going to be a lot of Isaiah Thomas, Mason Plumlee lineups, but you think about the four, the power forward there. If it's Trey Lyles, that's an extra shooter. There's going to be a lot of spacing there. If it's Juancho Hernan Gomez, lots of spacing there. Michael Porter Jr., if he gets healthy and starts playing, he'll play some four there as well. That's a lot of spacing for that spread pick and roll. I suspect that Plumlee will improve just from those lineups. I talked about him being more familiar with his role. I think he's become much more of a defensive player than an offensive player for Denver. I imagine offensively, now that there's a competent bench that he'll be playing alongside, I think there'll be opportunities for him to be even more of that playmaker that we saw passing, running the DHOs with Isaiah Thomas and other guys. But I think that still he understands that what this team needs most is those defensive minutes from him. Similar to Paul Millsap, I think that that helps the team. With the more a role player can focus in on one or two things, the better. The more they try to focus on a million different things, or if they don't know what they're supposed to be focused on, you know, obviously that makes them worse. But a guy like Mason, he's gonna, when he's not playing with Jokic, he can facilitate, but he's gonna set hard screens. When he is playing with Jokic, he's gonna defend and stay out of the way. And I think knowing that is gonna be good for him. And then lastly, and this is my favorite one, Jokic Plumlee lineups are starting to look a lot like Jokic Fried lineups. And I know these were the bane of Nuggets fans' existence for a while there early on in Plumlee's tenure. But here's a wild stat. Over the last 2 years, prior to January 22nd this year, the Jokic Plumlee duo was a plus 1.3 net. So again, outscored opponents by just 1.3 points per 100 possession. And that's in an enormous sample size, by the way. I believe like 500-600 minutes of those two playing alongside each other. Since January 22nd, in a medium sample size, which I think you can draw conclusions from, they were a plus 20.7 net, those two guys on the court together. That is an insane number, and I think it points to a couple things. One, when the offense was too over-orchestrated, one of the things that happened, similar to the Balkan Buddy lineup with Nurkic and Jokic, the play just resulted way too often in post-ups for Mason Plumlee. I mean, the ball was in his hands way too much. And part of that is, you know, when Jokic, when the team is running Jokic ball with four guys out and you have one player in the dunker, there's a lot of opportunities for that guy in the dunker to do what comes natural, which is to post up or duck in, because there's no help side. And when big guys, even, you know, lower skilled score guys like Mason Plumlee, I mean, he's skilled, but just not necessarily skilled as a scorer. When they see a one-on-one opportunity and a chance to pin the defender in the restricted zone, it's just players have that instinct of, this is what I do. I think it almost takes, you know, it takes in a tremendous amount of sacrifice from the player, but it also takes kind of altering your brain and realizing, no, actually I have to pick and choose my spots to duck in, because as good of a shot as that is, this offense that we run is going to produce an even better one. And I think that that's something that Plumlee both learned from playing alongside Jokic a lot of minutes, but also something that's a little bit more natural in a free-flowing offense. Just once you stop orchestrating plays, you know, a lot of times, and I'm actually starting a new series on Denver Stiffs. You can keep your eye out for this. I'm going to go through the entire Nuggets playbook with video examples and everything, so you can kind of familiarize yourself with the different play types and some of the tendencies that in different plays. But there's a handful of them where, you know, the more deliberate you get, the more players kind of zero in on, okay, we're trying to get the ball to Jamal Murray in this spot at this time, and these are the things we do. And when that doesn't happen, when the final ultimate thing doesn't happen, rather than just reading or reacting along the way, everybody sort of has, okay, nothing happened, now I need to make myself available. And that's where a lot of those duck-ins came. They run a play, the play didn't work, and now a guy's thinking, okay, well, don't worry, I'll just duck in here and we'll just get this kind of post-up shot. So I think allowing more of a free-flowing offense allows players to sort of breathe a little bit and use up the entire shot clock, because everybody knows there's no end point to the possession, whereas when it's deliberate, there's a little bit more obvious of where that end point is. So I think Mason Plumlee, I wonder where his minutes are going to go. If there's one thing I wonder, it's, you know, his minutes already got reduced from what they were in Portland, but next year with Trey Lyles, Juancho Hernangómez, Millsap, I wonder how much he's going to play power forward. And there's, if everybody's healthy, he might be a guy that's only playing, you know, 17, 18 minutes a game, maybe 20 minutes a game max. So his overall per game production might go down. But I think just knowing his role and some of the things I just talked about in this segment, I think will really help him to improve. And then obviously the addition of Isaiah Thomas. Thanks so much for tuning in, guys. Very excited for another episode coming to you on Friday evening. It's going to be another episode of the Rewatch. And I guess I should tell you, if you want to check it out and kind of prepare ahead of time, we're going to be doing the 2016-17 game against the Golden State Warriors, in which the Nuggets won running away, but they made tied an NBA record 24 three-pointers in the game. So if you want to get ahead of the curve, watch that game. It's on YouTube in a Spanish feed. You can watch the highlights, just kind of refamiliarize yourself with that game, because I think it's going to be a heck of a fun one to sort of rewatch and celebrate here on the show on Friday. Thanks so much for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.